introduce yourself, and then we'll continue our lovely conversation. So hi, everyone. I'm Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife, and I run a couple companies. We'll just call this one Empowering Midwifery Education today, because I think it's more about the clinical side than the business, but we'll see if they overlap. Christine Strothers and I have known each other. It's been 3-4 years now when I came out the first time and ate literally the best macaroni and cheese I've had in the country and briskets. Like, I'm excited. In January, you're taking me back there when we do our business conference.
So, yes, I will.
But yeah, so Christine and I, she's a certified professional midwife, and I always get it mixed up if it's South Carolina, North Carolina. I'm so sorry.
North.
North Carolina. Because
yeah.
I know you have a lot of reg issues compared to South Carolina that you have to deal with.
And they have their own issues, I'll just say that. But, you know, we do like North Carolina and South Carolina midwives work a lot together, because like one of my big projects is a group called Carolina Birth Junkies. So it's the Carolinas. And I founded that with my good friend, Lori, who is a licensed midwife in South Carolina. So we both, even though we're in very different states with very different setups, we really have kind of like tried to do it. So what we do is mainly teaching workshops, and we host a fantastic retreat in August, and you know, we get great speakers like Leslie and everything, but the idea
I was
is,
totally bummed the stupid tornadoes that hit. Oh my gosh, when
everyone was like, oh my gosh, poor Leslie,
I've never been through a tornado, let alone multiple tornadoes, in a hotel that I decided to pay cheap for, because I'm like, oh, I'm just going to stay next to the airport, and there's no tornado shelter, and I'm with the elite class of the community. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is how I'm going to die. So yes, I was a little traumatized to get on a plane, totally honest, the next day.
I was like, no, absolutely do not.
But yeah, so we're going to reschedule, and I'm coming out the end of January. So people just have to go to our websites and do a one day one-on-one. We're going to have fun talking about business. So
that's right. And we're going to be in beautiful, sunny North Carolina in January.
Yeah, you might not get me on a plane. I'm like, so sorry, I'm not going back to Michigan. But anywho, so they're going to be like, oh goodness, these ladies know each other too well. But yeah, so Christine is phenomenal with what I wanted to talk about today. I've been to lots of conferences this fall and talking to hundreds of midwives all over the country. And there was a very consistent theme happening with clinicals, with the students and the preceptors. And Christine, I consider you the best in the country when it comes to community-based midwifery and that mentorship, that relationship. You guys have phenomenal resources to help with learning styles and personalities and putting people together. And it's a business partnership short term, because this is your private practice and this is a student. They're going to be working for you. They're going to be involved. Your reputation is on the line with these students. And so we have to think differently. I mean, it was so much negative. I rarely heard a little rare gem of positive clinical preceptorship. I think part of it is just the tension happening across the country, the burnout rate of the midwives, how many are retiring, the demands are through the roof, the students can't find clinical sites, they feel like slave labor. So I would love for you, Christine, to kind of expand on what you've been seeing and what you've been suggesting to people to fix these challenges.
Yeah. And it is such a big challenge. And I think, you know, there's such a, you know, a good spirit in the community about home birth and out of hospital birth and midwifery within, you know, the client base, right? But the problem is, midwives are just so burned out. It's shocking to me that this is something that we are struggling so hard with right now. I just found out this morning that a midwife in my community who is younger than me had a stroke last week. A stroke. She was in the ICU. And there is no doubt in my mind that it's because of how stressed that her life is, you know? And I think, you know, when you look at that, it's no big surprise that midwives are burned out. They put too much on themselves. And so I think there's kind of two parts to kind of helping with burnout, but also helping with, you know, in some ways, I think the biggest way to solve the burnout crisis with midwifery is to have more new midwives and to really grow midwifery. That's the only way you really do it, is by training more good midwives, right? And
It needs to be healthy clinical sites. I mean, that's the vicious cycle we're in. We're in this little like funneling, and we need to expand and compound out. But How do we create healthy clinical sites when the midwives are burned out? That is the crutch of it all.
Yes. So I think we have to like simultaneously take care of the burnout problem, which is directly related to the problem with students and not being able to get students or keep students, or students quit, or they're just unhappy and they don't learn what they need to learn. And you know, part of this is midwives don't do a good job of treating themselves well, right? They take too many clients because, like we've talked about many times, that scarcity module, scarcity mindset where you are like, I need all the clients, and
Well,
you
I
know.
even think it's post-COVID, a combination of there's not a lot of options and their stories or their situations, and they just like I get it. You deserve a home birth. Everybody deserves a home birth. Like,
Yes.
so it's a combination of the scarcity and worry, especially when they're a new practice, just taking whatever they can, but also that love and heart and passion we have as midwives that everybody deserves an amazing home birth. Like,
Yes. Yeah. And
it
that's
should be.
not wrong. And you know, it's not wrong, but also, yes, everyone that wants a home birth deserves a home birth. Like, I 100% believe that. Even people that are maybe like borderline with, you know, risk stuff or have breaches or have twins or whatever, like, those people in my mind are all candidates for home birth with the right mentality. However, that doesn't mean that you personally, as a midwife, have to take every person that calls you or shows up on your doorstep or posts on the Facebook group that they're looking for a midwife in your town, right? Just stop chasing this and look at how you really would be happy in your practice, right? Like, what allows you to take care of yourself and get enough sleep and you know, take care of your family and your relationships. And also, you know, there is a community of midwives out there. Don't cut yourself out from that, right? Like, you know, it doesn't mean that you have to like work with these people intimately, but there are
Yeah,
other
you don't have to
midwives
be friends. You
in
don't have to get your kids together, but you can
your
have professional, healthy
community.
relationships. You
Yes.
may not believe how their philosophy of midwifery is yours, but you also don't do a consult and talk bad about each other. I mean, just the level of scarcity and toxicity of how people think they have to get clients. It just, yeah, but it's definitely, and my bias is always like the business education side and the
Yes.
professional development side, because in schools, nobody is teaching in any health industry. It doesn't matter if it's midwives, nurse practitioners, physicians, acupuncture, chiropractor. Nobody's teaching business. Nobody's teaching self-care. Nobody is teaching
Right.
the other side that's so essential to being successful, long-term, healthy practitioners. Like,
Right.
nobody
Right.
is really teaching that. And so
You're
it is.
right.
You have
And that's a
a
stressor, right? That's a stressor because you're kind of just grinding through this really difficult work and you're not getting paid enough to sustain yourself. You have to, and like we've talked about before, it's like so many people look at, well, I'm not taking care of my family. I'm not making the kind of money I feel like I need to. Maybe the answer is not take more clients, you
Yeah.
know? Maybe the answer is look at other things, right?
Yeah.
And what are
Adding
other things
extra
that you can do?
services, readjusting your fee schedules, meeting with
Yes.
an actual accountant and getting tax deductions. Like,
Yes.
I think that's the mindset, because if you have no business education, the only answer you have is I need more time for money, because that's all you know and that's all you've been taught. Versus thinking like a business owner, how do I scale up systems? How do I leverage these wonderful people in my community that also can fill voids that are here that now we can do so much more together? Like, the average midwife doesn't think that way yet. We're working
Right,
on it,
right.
but
Yeah,
yeah.
exactly. And it's like you said, it's kind of fee for service, which is maybe not the best idea because that also puts you in a
Quality,
place of
yes, quality
doing
service
right,
package. You're
doing things that you are not good at and waste your time and your energy when you could just be more like organized, but also look at who can help you, you know, and what you can do differently. And there's also, and this bothers me a lot because there's, and you know this. There is also a subset of midwives, and they're primarily community midwives, who feel like this is your calling and you should do it because it's your calling. Don't look at it as a job or a career even. And like I do believe that midwifery is a calling, but also we don't live on a commune.
Yeah, I was gonna say
The
you're not
best.
a nun and they provide everything for you. You don't have children, you never have sex, you never have any life outside of the commune. That's a different life. It's a different world. Like it's just you don't have any other identity but this calling. You have many layers to who you are, and they all need to be equally respected.
Yes, exactly. So that's like part of the self-care, I think, that needs to be going on more with midwives in order to, because I think what you hear so often from midwives, and I hear it all the time, and sometimes I call bullshit and sometimes I don't, but is I'm just too busy to have a student. I can't take that on. And I'm just like, of course, you know, it's a face plant kind of thing, but what it is they are just struggling so hard that they don't realize they're not seeing the forest for the trees, right? They're not saying, well, what would make my life better and my midwifery
Yeah,
practice
they're in
better?
survival mode. They're in
Yes.
that basic Maslow hierarchy of need, and all you're thinking about is your next meal, your
Yes.
shelter, your paycheck. Like when you are, I mean, I've created the midwife Maslow hierarchy of needs because I want everybody to
I
be
love
the
it.
Zen. I because it's part of my frustration. Augustine Colebrook and I talk about it all the time. She's like, "You're the Titanic, Leslie," and they're like barely getting on their lifeboats, and they're barely like on their like she helps me like because I'm like I am so frustrated. I want the midwives to be to their Zen, their soul purpose, and their soul being. And
Yes.
she's like, we have to just get them from the survival realm to just the feeling like I have a hobby and I do have friends and I
Yes.
do actually have more of an identity than midwifery. Like, that's what we got to work on right now.
Yeah, definitely. So I think, you know, that's one thing. And another big component of that I've seen and that I work with a lot, like it's kind of my thing that I'm doing a lot with now is working together in groups, whether that's closely working together or just support for each other and, you know, peer review and workshops together. And, you know, part of that is students and training other midwives, right? Because, you know, how are you ever going to retire if you never train any other midwives? And, you know, and I know people are like, oh, I'm never going to retire. I'm going to just midwife till I die. Okay.
You slip and fall and you're forced to retire or whatever, or like it's unrealistic to do it till you die. Eventually you're gonna want to have a little bit, maybe see some grandkids, maybe see the world a little bit. Like you're gonna want a little separation. I found it fascinating being to these different conferences. I could tell within about 30 seconds who has always practiced in one little community their whole life, never left it. And who has been other places? Because the mindset are totally different because you just don't know what you don't know. Like it was fascinating. There was a few international people that are now in the US being CPM students, and they don't understand. They can see at high level how broken our structure, because they're like, we have like group practices and the midwives are amazing and they work nicely with the doctors and everybody plays like all the stuff we see here happening. Why is it happening? And I try to teach a lot with the history and the 1970s and 80s and 60s and the long-term history and the toxicity of the medical system against the midwives and what's happened. But we can be better than that. Like we don't have to just play fire with fire, like kill with kindness. Like there was some amazing stories that midwives were telling at these conferences and retreats that everybody was telling them they can't do it this way. They can't do it. You can't do this. And they're just like, that just lit my fire more to show them I can. It wasn't that I yelled at them or I fought back. It was, this is my little kindling to show I can do something new. I can do something better. I can do something different here just because it's not the norm. And how do we inspire that in our next generation when maybe the midwives are feeling like I'll try to fake it for you, but I'm not in that mindset myself? Like, how do we transform the midwives? Because it takes time. You've had these habits, you've had subconscious, you've been doing this thinking your entire life. How do you, it takes time.
Yeah, it does. And I think a little bit of an openness to be like, okay, maybe I'm not the only midwife for every person in my community. Like, maybe it would be much better and they would be better served and we would be better served as practitioners to be like, okay, you know, here's some people, some other midwives that I trust. Granted, they don't practice just like me, but you know, everybody's an individual, but they are fully competent midwives. They would do a good job. You know, like I trust them. And, for me, that's kind of easy because I've trained a lot of midwives. So I'm like, okay, this person, this
You
person, this
created your
person.
collaborations and it takes time,
Yes.
but yes.
Yeah, it does. It takes time, but also then you have a group, and not only do they know and trust each other, but you understand them. And that makes for such great collaborative practice, right? And the nice thing about that is that then you can really say, and this is something we've really started to implement over the last couple of years is, okay, yes, we have a group, there's four midwives, four CPMs, and we have a multitude of students, right? So that we kind of are teaching as a group. So you also don't have to feel like, that student is like we were talking about, like you're their mother. No, you're not their mom. That you are having an opportunity to, do prenatals or births with them and, show them what you do and how how you run prenatals or whatever, right? So it's not this huge burden, right? I think people are like, oh, one more thing I have to do in my day is deal with this student.
Well, and if
And
you set up the right structure, I think a good chunk of it, just like they don't own business, nobody has taught them how to be a good preceptor. Nobody has taught them how to support and mentor. Like very few of them hire staff, so they don't really know how to work in a team. They aren't used to teaching. They aren't used to, I mean, they're really good at teaching their clients, which is always fascinating to me because like they say, "Oh, I'm not good at marketing." I'm like, "You sell yourself in front of a console each and every time. You just
That's
have to
right.
like apply this knowledge in a different way." And
Right.
so like we're mothers and we're mentors and we teach our clients. You just have to take this mindset and have boundaries and expectations. But if you have a student in the first 2 or 3 months, it will be more work, but long term, if you're doing it right, they will give you leaps and bounds more value to you if you have a right structured clinical relationship.
Yeah, exactly. And that's part of the problem, I think, is, some people think it's like these two extreme opposing ideas. It's like one is a student is way too much work. I already have too much on my plate. Two, I'm going to have this student and they are going to be perfect and they are going to just be everything I need. And, they're
You're
going to
gonna be
read
a
my
mini
mind.
me, and I am
Yes.
just gonna get double the work done and blah, blah, blah. And yeah.
Exactly. And that's not how it, that's not how it works. And you're right, a lot of people don't know how to be a good preceptor. And it's very different, to kind of teach someone about something that's so close to our identity and close to our hearts, right? And it's particularly a problem if they're like, hey, so I read this thing or I heard this thing in class the other night, and basically saying, you're not up to
Your
speed,
standards
right?
are outdated. I'm trying to say politely to you, and how do you approach that?
And that's a tricky situation. And those are the things you have to think about. And part of being a good preceptor is being willing to learn, like
And being
how to,
open, well, let's talk about it. I mean, that's the important thing. Let's talk about what you learned because maybe it works in one state, but it doesn't work in another state. But let's talk. This is a learning opportunity. Or I appreciate you keeping me up with the times, like that abundance mindset that these students are your free continuing education credits. Like they're
They
keeping
really
you
are.
up.
Exactly. And but I think it's really worthwhile to to make some time to learn about how to be a good preceptor and how to be a good apprentice. I feel like I'm trying to work that in with students, but they also, if they're going in with all this good knowledge about what to do and preceptors are not doing their part about learning how to be a good preceptor, it does make it harder. And I feel like really it's really important for me right now in what I'm doing with students and so forth is to reach out to their preceptors and I could be like, hey, here's some things that I'm teaching them about in our school, and if you want these resources, I have these resources for preceptors. I have an actual course that apprentices and preceptors take together. And, it's like, I know, again, it sounds like more work, but it makes the work easier,
Yeah, well,
So,
and just
yes, is it
thinking
one more
outside the
thing?
box, because people instantly think, well, I've already like have no sleep, so you're telling me not to sleep. And I said, Let's look at basic time management, because a lot of people will say, well, I don't have time to read a book. And I was like, everybody's in the car, and a lot of time radios pivot to an audiobook. Like, you did not add any more time. It's habits. It's like, I think sometimes we just have to pause and reflect. What am I doing day to day? What is on autopilot? Is there a better way? Is there an easier way? Is there different ways to do this? Maybe it will take me a little more work initially to learn these new habits, to think differently, to pause and not keep going on autopilot. But the long-term benefits are worth that little bit of investment. Like, I think midwives are just too much on that rat wheel survival, trying to hope they don't fly right off right now.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, they're in this stressful place in their lives, and you know, unfortunately, like, we're all humans, and when you're really stressed and you're maybe not happy in your relationships, guess who you take that out on? Your student, right?
Or
And
your
that's,
partner. The divorce rates are through the roof right now.
they
Yes.
are, they are, they are. I'm like, I honestly don't know how any midwives stay married when I look at how they are working and what they're doing. And it never surprises me, you know. It's either like, well, I have to choose to keep being a midwife, or I have to choose to stay married. And that's not a fair choice. Like, you should not have to make that choice in your life.
Well, and that's part of the art of boundaries and getting past the ego inside of us saying what I think is a good midwife, like what we think is a good mom and what we think is a good partner and what we think is this. Like the times of the 1970s and what we read with Ina May and the farm and all these Kitty Ernst, like they're amazing, but the times are different. Contemporary midwives and what our demands are. Both families, they have to work. The dad can't stay home. It usually is the mom that stays home, and birth doesn't allow you, and you don't have as good of a support network. The parents that used to retire aren't retiring, so they can't watch the kids. Like, daycare is crazy expensive. You can't get a daycare for 2 in the morning. So there's these stressors in life that the prior generation of midwives did not have to even think about. So we have to give credit, and because too many midwives feel guilty and feel, I'm like, you're trying to put a circle in a peg hole. Like, you can't do this. We need sustainable midwifery. Yes, this utopia that you're talking about, I think we can get there with more birth centers, more training sites, more heavy teaching mindsetted midwives that are thinking differently. And then you get your collaboration, you get your team, you get your utopia. But it's hard. It's just because I think too many of them, the traditions and innovation are in what's happening in life are just clashing too much.
And definitely, you're right. I think we think, okay, yes, you know, clients want, my clients only want me. Like, I've literally heard midwives say that. Like, when I was like, listen, do you want to be, I literally approached someone and said, do you want to be part of our group? You know, we don't like rotate call or anything, but you know, we cover for each other, right? You know, someone is going out of town and you know, whatever. And she was like, well, you know, my clients really only want me. And I was like, okay, that said a lot. That said a lot, and said a lot about your level of trust of other professionals, you know. But you know, it's like, we don't, I think it's again, like we've talked about this before, there's an ego that I think just comes from struggling and struggling and struggling
Well, and time again, if you, it's a difference of if you're concerned about the caliber of care versus just a different personality. So, like, if I always joke, but didn't joke with our practices, you don't want Leslie Cornwell care, you want midwifery care. Like, we're all amazing midwives. And after the birth happens, like, all of a sudden you did two, three births with her and you couldn't make it. And you ask how the birth went. It's the emotions, it's the feeling. They got the birth they wanted because you gave them an amazing midwife. It wasn't you. We have to get past this mindset that they need me. Like, that's too much dependency. We are teaching people to community empowerment, women empowerment, midwifery. The art of midwifery is what's giving them an amazing birth. It's not Christine. It's not Leslie. It's not Jill. It's not Jane. Like, we have to get past this mindset.
You're right. That's really important. And maybe some of that is we aren't really sure what midwifery care should look like. Does, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like in other countries, people are like, this is what midwives do.
Yeah, our
Like, we're
country
kind
doesn't
of
help.
like,
No, it doesn't.
it's like we don't know. We're like, does being a good midwife mean your clients can call you anytime, night or day, and you answer the phone regardless of what they're calling about? Like, you know, do you just
Well,
have
even just
no
the
boundaries?
complexity of the layers of the bigger system, you got 50 states, you've got five educational pathways, you've got three settings that don't usually overlap with care. So, like, The average midwife has a hard time explaining it, let alone the average consumer. So, like, yeah, until we get more unification and cohesiveness, midwives do this. This is our scope of practice. We have different pathways to get there. We can practice in different settings, but this is the core of midwifery. Until we stop getting these national organizations and on a local level that each other need to stop attacking each other, it's just we're doing the job of the greater medical system to make us go away. We are.
Right, exactly. We're they don't even need to worry anymore about us. We're killing each other off, basically, because we're not looking at midwifery as a whole and us being part of, being a representative of midwifery care. We're all like, cowboys out there, like, no, I'm the only one that can really do this right. And that's just ridiculous. And that's part of, why there's this infighting and so forth is. Like, can't we just agree that midwifery care is good for women and it's good for families? Here's what that looks like. Everybody get on board, Like, why do we have to make it like, oh, this midwife does this and doesn't do this and blah, blah. You know what? Who cares? Just like
Well,
literally, who cares?
Augustine Colebrooke at the Midwifery Wisdom Conference, the second one, it was absolutely phenomenal. So if people can go to it next year, it's in Louisiana. I highly encourage it. But she did a really phenomenal talk about paradigm shifts and life is a game. Too many midwives play the finite game. We don't play the infinite game. We play the finite. We're thinking of our little space, our little world, our little situation. We're not thinking the bigger picture. We're not, most other systems and things that are playing us are playing the infinite game. Like she showed so many great examples through history and game. So like it was a phenomenal speech she did, and it hit home. Like, how are midwives playing the game of life? Are they just focused and little and baby and small and just what matters to them? Or what is the legacy of my children? What is the legacy of midwifery? What is the legacy of what we want for our next generation? How do we play the infinite game? Like, it was awesome.
I like it. I like it. I can
I
see it
don't, I
before.
think she recorded it. Yeah, I'll have to ask if the team can maybe put that on their channel or podcast, but it was a really good talk. So I would love for you, because I know we talk like just the preceptor, a midwife relationship. One, a lot of the students aren't happy with their schools. And it's interesting because I know both sides very well with the nurse midwife educational clinical expectations and the MEEC and the PAP process. And it's far more work for the CPM instructors, probably like mentors, than it is for the CNM instructors, because the schools, I think there's a lot more accountability needs to be done for the schools to do more than they're doing for these students, because that causes a ripple effect that these preceptors think they're just going to be a clinical site, but then they become a free teacher. They're finding them in their books. They're doing their classes for them because they don't quite understand what a traditional clinical site looks like. So I found that fascinating too, just with seeing the different pathways of how clinical relationships can be. The one in the community-based setting is completely different than the CNMs traditionally get from what the schools expect out of the students and expect out of their clinical sites are very different.
Yeah, it really is. There are not a lot of requirements for apprenticeship placement and so forth. And it is kind of the Wild West as far as, trying to find, and that's the biggest complaint that you hear in home birth circles and community birth circles is, I can't find a good student. And at the same time, nine people are saying, I can't find a preceptor. And it's like, the problem is that there's not a good system, right? To kind of help, to find a preceptor, to find a student. And then, people have bad experiences with one or the other. And so they're like, well, I'm not, how many times have I heard people say, well, I'm not going to take any more students because of
One
X.
bad stereotype. That's like the doctor saying, well, I'm never collaborating with a midwife because 10 years ago, you're reinforcing that same stigma. And it's a vicious cycle, because I know there'll be midwife schools that are like, you're criticizing us. I get they have their challenges because they're like, okay, we'll add a department. Now people can't afford the school and they don't tap into FAFSA. Like, I 100% understand the midwife school's struggles. Like, I am not saying there are the problem with fixing all these things. As soon as you talk about one problem, it's connected to another problem, it's connected to another problem. That's where people get super frustrated, because all these barriers to expand midwifery are connected together. And so I think it's taking very few people like Augustine and I and a few other really high leaders out there. We're trying to break all these barriers at the same time together. Like, but until other people are saying, I'm willing to change my local preceptor site, I'm willing to put boundaries of what a relationship for mentoring and structure looks like, all of us on a high level trying to make these things happen aren't going to matter if the grassroots aren't saying, I'm going to try to do my part. I'm going to try to shift how I think about students, how I approach midwifery. Like, we have to all do it together.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And there is part of what's going on is it's like trying, there's a power structure, right? And so you have these power structures that are both, educational and so forth that are trying to kind of like try to preserve kind of traditional midwifery, but also not giving enough specifics that people really know how to do these and set up these situations, right? And it's like, well, we really want to preserve the PEP process, which I get, but the reason that we have to keep the PEP process is because Meek is so restrictive about their educational programs, and they're just not available to most people financially and geographically. So, right, but then here's your PEP process. Like, here's these 38 pages of skills. Good luck. And no, good structure about what preceptor's supposed to do with this. Like, here's their booklet, sign this, right? And it's like, really? That's what you're doing, so to take that on as a preceptor is like, that seems very intimidating. And I get it, because they're like, seriously, like I'm supposed to teach people all these things. What are the parameters for, like for saying they learned this or what setting and
Or
how did they
sometimes it's the blind leading the blind. I noticed that with the clinical rotation because I was a mentor for the IV and the lab draws. And a lot of states, the midwives just can't do meds. So then they're getting signed off and or trying to use these one little opportunities to learn extensively pharmacology and all this stuff about the meds because they're getting no exposure. And maybe this state they can't, but then they move and now they're like, well, this is why you're dangerous because nobody had taught you. And so we have to have some sort of baseline. Like if that person wasn't taught it, they have to have the integrity to say, I can't sign that off for you. I can't. We need to get you another preceptor. We need to get you some online classes. Like, we have to be. I'm not saying you're a good or bad midwife, but also if you're not the level of capability to do it yourself, you probably shouldn't be teaching other people how to do it.
Exactly. And what is appropriate for really like a midwife starting off, and what does that look like, and what continuing ed do you need to have to kind of to kind of say, okay, so now I'm kind of graduating to this other thing. But you're right, then when you have all kinds of restrictions in different states, that really throws a monkey wrench into being able to train people appropriately, right? Like, if you have restrictions on meds, how are you going to teach someone how to administer medication? Or, honestly, my opinion, how to actually teach someone about managing a severe hemorrhage?
Yeah,
If you
the
have no meds,
pharmacology, the coma, it's not just injecting an IM injection in their thigh. Like I
right.
think that it's
It's
just been focused, like you don't understand the potential comorbidities, the pharmacology,
right.
the breakdown rate, the how long does it get in the system? Like there's a lot of layers to this you have to understand. And so yeah, I think that there's no right or wrong answer. It's just the intention of these talks are just to brainstorm and get people to think outside the box and inspire them that us as little people, even though we're talking about all these burnout and challenges and struggles, people are powerful. It takes a little bit of momentum to make great things happen. I feel like we need to take the last 5, 7 minutes to reinforce the power that these little midwives can say to say, I am going to put boundaries on my phone after 5 o'clock. I am going to take a student, but I'm going to do it differently this time. I am going to reach out to Christine and I'm going to learn how these other midwives across the country are doing this relationship because I think it is important to get more midwives out there. So, like, if you have any other advice or suggestions, I would love to end in a positive note because I feel like half
I
the time
know,
we're
I know.
venting and
Right,
complaining,
right.
and I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think educating ourselves is always the best place to start, right? And to really to look at what's going on and be like, okay, I want to do better in these areas, or I need to shift this. How do I do that? Is you reach out to people who know, you take a class, you find out about a different way to restructure your practice, and really think in positive ways what you can do to change the whole landscape. I think it's huge. And Like I want to grow midwifery because it's my calling and it's really important and it's significant enough that I want to make good contributions. And that also serves women even better, right? So if we look at that, how do we do that, right? And it's so big picture. You're right. It's hard to see when we're feeling small, but we aren't, and we have much more power in groups, right? If we really stick together, that's really where we find our power is to, not just as midwives, but as the midwifery community, as far as clients and families. And, there are friendly medical providers and there are friendly legislators. We just have to find them, and really help them feel what we're feeling.
Well, and I think part of it is when people are saying, "Oh my gosh, I'm exhausted, I'm tired, you want me to do one more thing?" It comes down to that basics of we actually have more time if we prioritize and structure and just stop going on autopilot and just little things. Like, I'm not going to binge watch Netflix tonight because I want a reality break. I'm going to do some healthy things. I'm going to exercise. I'm going to listen to meditation. Like, sometimes it's hard to realize, and I do it a lot with consulting work. I can give all the best advice in the world, but if you don't want to take a direct accountability of it and you don't want to acknowledge I'm where I'm at because of my choices and my decisions and my upbringing, but I can change things. Like, until that happens in anyone's mindset, whether it's a habit or it's a midwifery burnout or they want to change things, like, we can talk till we're blue in the face. So I think that's what I want to hit home to the midwives. Like, you are powerful. You can shift things in your life tomorrow. I'm not saying it's going to be exactly your utopia, but it'll be baby steps, little habits, and it'll compound on itself. You'll notice in 3 to 6 months how much better things are by making these little baby steps.
And reach out to other birth workers and other midwives, and don't be afraid to take a student. The student may be the best thing that ever happened to your practice. I'm very serious about that. And that is scary, but it also can be really, really good. And it takes some effort, but like all good relationships do. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, it's a marriage, a relationship, anything. Everybody has personality differences and tugs and pulls, and your clients, your kids, your life. So we just have to learn how to get along and play nice in the sandbox together. And it's just, it's fascinating. So thank you so much for your time today, Christine. I always enjoy chatting with you.
Thanks, Leslie.